I'm Erhard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 170 for the weekend starting 10 March 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, MultiChoice talks up DStv Now and online streaming, and a new streaming player comes to South Africa.
Also this week, MTN is trying to reinvent itself for a new era. A new deal on the ICT white paper, could it be true? And WikiLeaks, CIA leaks.
Time to push the start button, another podcast.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rehot?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good. How was your week?
Yeah, it was good. Busy, as always. I'm a bit tired, and I've got lots of housework to do this weekend. Some maintenance on the old house.
Oh, fun and games.
Otherwise, I'm good.
Fun and games. Yeah, I'm also tired. Haven't slept well this week, but we're looking forward to it.
Could that be a result of a hangover from your birthday yesterday?
Not at all, actually. I took it very easy. I went and listened to a trail running presentation, so I had a very easy birthday.
Birthday. Well, happy birthday from the other half of the Tech Central podcast.
Thank you. Thanks very much. But this isn't about us. It's about the tech news, so let's jump straight into it. And DStv hosting a press conference out in the town of Magaliesburg, which is sort of halfway between Joburg and Rustenburg, I'd say. Very nice venue there at a hotel. And I popped through for some of the sessions yesterday, two-day event. I didn't stick around for the whole thing, but went along for the highlights, and I think on the first day. And they're talking some interesting stuff. Mark Rayner, who's the CEO of MultiChoice South Africa, talking about how broadband is really changing the broadcasting game for them, for the whole industry. Mm-hmm. And they're really starting to talk up streaming and video on demand and all that sort of thing, and the slow demise of linear television. So it's interesting to see hear a traditional broadcaster talking about all these newfangled things that we typically hear from the Netflixes and Showmaxes of the world. Mm. But they're really pushing in that direction, and we've seen it happening for a while already with things services like Catch Up, for example, and then the online integration with their PVRs, allowing you to watch content on demand delivered over the internet as well, beyond what's stored on the decoder.
Yeah.
But now they're going to the next level. For a while they've had a service called DStv Now, which is their streaming platform. Which you kind of I've always kind of felt was kind of they're treated as a poor second cousin, not something they were investing very heavily in. But you get the impression that that's starting to change, and that DStv Now is starting to become a big focus for MultiChoice, which is, I think, quite exciting. As someone whose viewing habits have changed dramatically in the last couple of years, I mean, I don't watch linear television at all anymore.
At all, yeah.
At all. And I used to watch a bit of the news, a bit of sport and that sort of thing, but... You know, to be honest, I don't watch, you know, sport occasionally. I'll watch a game. I'm not a huge sports fan.
That's the only wild card with any terrestrial television, really. I mean, the licensed content like that.
But, you know, even news. I used to, you know, catch a news bulletin on one of the news channels or something. Mm. I don't even do that anymore. I just get my news online. Mm. So I think it's good that MultiChoice is thinking in this direction. Now, DStv Now is a linear television offering, funnily enough, delivered over the internet, in addition to all the catch-up services. So you get access to 60-plus streaming channels.
Yeah.
Not all of them are there. Some notable exceptions, like the ENCA News Channel, for example, is not there. But all the big ones, like you'd expect, Mnet, the movies channels, Supersport, they're all available on DStv Now, along with a lot of catch-up, online catch-up content and over 1,000 movies. So it's quite a compelling service. The big problem with it is it's only available in a standard definition format at the moment. There's no word at this stage when that will go HD.
Yeah, that's quite surprising. I mean, you'd imagine that a company like that would have the bandwidth and the civic capacity to push it. Maybe they're trialing it to see the uptake. I mean, I guess it's going to cost a lot of resources at the end of the day.
I think so. I would imagine that they're just waiting to hit the button on the HD. I don't know why they haven't done it so far. Maybe they don't want to... I don't know, maybe they don't want
overload the system, so to speak. I don't know.
I don't know what the reason is, but I'm sure HD is... I'd be very surprised if DStv Now does not have HD streaming by this time next year. So they're announcing a number of... They made a number of interesting announcements. The first was that it is now available for Chromecast devices.
Nice.
So if you have a Chromecast plugged into the back of your TV, you can now use your Android app to send the the stream to your big screen TV. Mm. Again, still, as I understand it, in standard definition. So yeah, if you want to watch the HD feed, you're still going to have to go back to the satellite decoder option. Mm. One hopes that will change quite soon. And then I asked during the after Mark Rayner's presentation, I asked him whether DStv Now, which at the moment is only available to DStv Premium customers. So if you have to have a satellite box, until recently you even had to have a PVR to access the service, but now they've made it available to all Premium customers. And in fact, they've announced this week that DStv Now will be coming to Compact and Extra customers as well. So they there'll be a limited subset of channels, obviously, to the to those other subscribers. Yeah, so you'll be subscriber to that. But I asked him whether they're going to bring it to as a standalone service, and he said it's something they talk about every day. They can't give me a date at this stage on when that'll happen, but it's in the future. It's coming.
Nice.
And I think that'll be a compelling value proposition, because I think a lot of people, you know, people who've got broadband, do they, you know, you move into a house, it's got fiber. Do you really want to have to go through the pain of getting an installer in to put a satellite dish on the roof and then plugging in this antiquated set-top box into your TV, et cetera, et cetera? You'd rather just, I don't know about other people, but honestly, I just plug my TV into the internet and watch.
Well, that certainly is the future of any kind of, I guess, watching or entertainment these days. I mean, it is going that way. It's now just a matter of converting those people that still have terrestrial boxes.
Yeah, and that'll take decades.
Yeah, it will. I mean, it'll be a long uptake, but I mean, there's enough people doing it at the moment, streaming online, to warrant the market.
We are the early adopters, and listeners to the show are the early adopters.
I'm sure we'll all have some sort of streaming alternative in most of our houses. So
indeed,
as listeners. Yeah,
indeed. So I think it's quite exciting that they're talking about doing this stuff, and we're I look forward to playing with it, but that HD stuff has to come sooner rather than later, I think. So some interesting announcements coming out. DSD, they're going to be supporting Apple, what's it called, AirPlay?
Oh yes. Nice.
Where you can push to your Apple device as well, push to your TV. Apple TV options, that's coming quite soon. They haven't given a specific date on that yet. I think they said they've got an issue with Apple. I forget the exact detail. It's in the story on Tech
Central. I'm sure the licensing process the process
complex.
Could be quite good.
It's a bit more difficult than going through Google, yeah, apparently. But look out for that. You know, it's going to be an interesting one. And Richard, before we carry on, I want to talk about a new streaming service called iFlix that's coming to South Africa. But before we do that, I have completely forgotten that we need to do our quiz.
I didn't want to interrupt you. There was such a great conversation about the DStv Now.
So let's do our quiz, and then we'll come back to talking about streaming. Do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure. First question in this week's quiz. MTN's Phuthuma Nhleko stepped down as interim executive chairman on Monday to make way for new CEO Rob Shooter. He will revert to being non-executive chairman, but he intends to step down from the board altogether. When will this happen?
Our second question, MultiChoice is expanding. Oh, here we go. I've given away all the answers. MultiChoice is expanding its DStv Now streaming service to more subscribers. Apart from premium, which other bouquets will now have access?
The third question, the CEO of MTN South Africa, Mteto Nyati, quit this week. What is his new job? And for a bonus point, who is taking over the CEO role at MTN South Africa?
Fourth question, fiber broadband provider Vumatel is expanding in KwaZulu-Natal through an acquisition of which company?
And the final question, WikiLeaks leaks of apparent CIA spying tools showed the agency allegedly was able to hack and take over the cameras on what TV brands?
And we'll get to that story a bit later in the show. But let's get back to this discussion we're having about streaming. This new server, have you heard of iFlix before this week?
Never. I mean, it looks remarkably a lot like Netflix if you look at it at first glance.
It does, indeed.
Yeah, never heard of them.
So they, from what I can tell, came out of Malaysia, and they operate in about half a dozen or more markets in Southeast Asia. And they are a very low-cost streaming option. I think in Malaysia, the price they quote is around $1.80 a month. And in most markets they operate, they're between $2 and $3, or $2 and $2.50 a month. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at 25, 30 rand a month for a range of Hollywood and local content. They say that their target market is people who pirate content, and they're priced to be so low that it's a no-brainer to actually subscribe and to get access to their services. So they're significantly cheaper than Netflix and mm-hmm. and Showmax in this market, and probably on a par with the sort of pricing we see from Amazon Prime at the moment, but that's mm-hmm. a special introductory offer. So we don't know the details yet of what the launch plan is here for South Africa. We just know that it's coming. I suspect, reading between the lines, that it's coming this year, and they're planning to launch in a number of African markets. Africa and the Middle East, they've identified as a big growth area for their business. They've been focused on emerging markets in Southeast Asia, and they want to continue to grow in emerging markets, which I think, more than putting them in conflict with Netflix, probably puts them on a collision course with Showmax. Because Naspers has said that Showmax is really an emerging markets play, and they've expanded into Kenya and into Poland, and of course they're available in markets all across Africa. So iFlix looks like a more direct competitor to Showmax, especially in light of the fact that both companies are saying that they're going to be developing local content in the markets in which they operate. In fact, Showmax in Poland is already offering a wide range of local content. In South Africa, there's quite a bit of local content available on Showmax including Afrikaans content. So it's an interesting one. And Bloomberg reporting earlier in the week that they've just received, iFlix that is, they've just received a $90 million, so 1.2 billion rand investment led by telecommunications giants Liberty Global and the Kuwait-based Zain, which is a big mobile operator with interest in a number of markets. So they've got some heavy hitters behind them. So they're not a fly by night crowd. This, and they're coming quite aggressively into this market. It'll be interesting to see what they launch with. I suspect we're going to have to wait quite a few months before we see anything here in South Africa. Mm. Probably later this year, sometime we'll see something. But the proof is going to be in the pudding, as it were. I think we're going to be spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
It's not just these guys. We've got MTN, which is very keen to get into this space.
Yeah.
PCCW launched here, but they went very quiet quite quickly with their offering. But there's a lot of guys looking to come into this market, and I think and they're big guys as well. I mean, Naspers is a gigantic company. MTN obviously is a huge company with lots of resources behind it, and this company, being backed by the likes of Zain and Liberty Global, is also a serious player. And one wonders to what extent and how long these players are willing to run at losses in order to build market share. Could we be looking at a serious war in streaming TV services over the next 5 years, in which these companies just go for broke?
I think so. Look, I mean, it certainly seems like, as with craft beer, if I can make that analogy, it's a very hot thing right now, and everybody's trying to open their brewery or open a content shop that can license or stream. I mean, it's the same thing with music that we're seeing now, with the amount of streaming services mm-hmm. that's available specifically to us in South Africa.
I suppose the risk, to continue your craft beer analogy, is that they all get punched drunk and pour billions of rands into these things when perhaps the market doesn't justify it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess it depends on the technology you run on run your system on. I mean, if it's custom built and you want to be a Netflix rival through and through, that's what you'll have to do. I'm also sure there's a lot of these streaming services that just piggyback off an existing infrastructure that use streaming services just to provide a licensed content to customers. I guess it's really the content that's going to dictate who stays.
Mm.
I mean, we know Netflix isn't going anywhere because they're producing some superb titles at the moment.
For sure.
If we look at just guys licensing content, that might not get them far, but if they invest in local content and really pick up the slack that SABC has dropped so terribly on content developers, there's just nothing happening in that space.
There's a huge opportunity there for someone who can come up with the right content, and there's no doubt you're right. You mentioned the SABC. They've had a huge audience historically from those soap operas that they commission.
Yeah.
At some point in the future, one of these streaming providers is going to come up with a soap opera that's going to be massive in the mass market, and then everyone's got to have it.
And you'll have then you'll have your moms and pops converting just to get access to
that. Indeed,
for sure.
Indeed. So it's going to be an interesting. It's certainly going to be a robust and interesting market over the next few years. And there's no doubt as we as consumers are going to win out of this.
Mm.
But it's clear that we're also going to have to subscribe to a range of these services. It's not like there's one provider we can choose.
I'm happy with that. I think if you look at, DSTV's got that monopoly on the amount of channels on terrestrial.
Yes.
But if you were to break it up, and buy an adventure package or an outdoor package, being the National Geographic channels and the sports package. Mm-hmm. I can see myself doing the same thing if DSTV were to do that. So it's not really too far to imagine that you'd have Showmax, Netflix, we already do. You know, just subscribe to the ones that you want their content from.
Indeed.
And you can stop very easily if you don't like it. You know,
you can indeed. Yeah, there's no lock-in. So, and I do so. I mean, I can't watch all of them. There's already too much content, and there's more coming. So, I've already kind of made up my mind that I'm going to subscribe to two. And I'll just choose whoever's the best two at any given moment.
So which two are you using at the moment? Showmax and Netflix, I imagine.
No, I'm currently subscribed to Netflix and Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Amazon Prime. I don't know. I don't think I'll continue with Amazon Prime if the price goes up to $10 or whatever it is after the trial period. If their content mix hasn't improved dramatically, there's a good chance I'll probably go back to Showmax actually once the $2.99 special period is over. But there are a couple of shows on Amazon that I'm really enjoying. I'm busy watching Goliath at the moment, which is quite good. Nice. Some of the acting is a bit dodgy, but it's a good show, anchored by Billy Bob Thornton, who's a brilliant actor. And, of course, The Man in the High Castle is also excellent television, both on Amazon. But, you know, once I finished those shows, and I subscribed in the first place for the Jeremy Clarkson show, Grand Tour. You know, once I finish those shows, you know, I'll probably go back to Showmax.
And I'm enjoying Showmax at the moment. It's got some really great South African content on there, you know. I wasn't a big CakeNet fan, but there's some good South African. I just watched a documentary series. It was quite an old series about the history of filmmaking in South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
And it was interesting going back to the beginning, you know, the beginning of the industry, really, and talking about the big players and the guys that made film in South Africa happen. And you can't get that anywhere else.
No.
I mean, this is all archives that they've bought from whoever owned that content. And yeah, that immediately showed the value to me in having that local content.
I can't see myself cancelling my Netflix subscription. The amount of content on there is just too big.
And they add so many amazing
things. They do.
I still miss the US version, not going to lie to you. VPN not working for that anymore. But
the South African version has improved dramatically.
There's some movie licenses that you don't have that's on the international one.
Sure.
It still has the better library in the end of it.
Of course, and I think that'll always be the case. But I think as time goes on, you see that library improving in the South African market, especially as some of those exclusive content deals they did with the likes of MultiChoice expire, and then they can start to load some of their original programming, like House of Cards, etc., that they sold to MultiChoice in the past, they can now keep back and use on their platform. So I think we'll see that improvement. But you're right. It's you do have to subscribe to multiple options. I was quite interested to hear the CEO of MultiChoice this week at the press conference talking about what the industry term for it. They call them skinny bundles.
Bundles.
He says the jury's out on skinny bundles or the traditional model of having a broad amount of content available. I'm, as a consumer, I'm quite happy buying multiple skinny bundles, as it were.
I think customized a little bit. I mean, it's... But also, I mean, the reason why skinny bundles will work is because of the cost of having all of those channels, the DSTV's example, is just too expensive. We, you know, 800 Rand a month, roughly, for the content, compared to 100 and something odd Rand on the streaming equivalent.
Yes.
It's difficult to justify when you look at it like that, when you have access to the streaming services.
Yes. So you have to add the cost of broadband on top of that. But if you've got it anyway, because... you and I.
Again, we're in that.
We're going to have internet at home. It's just, it's not negotiable.
It's water, lights, water, lights, and internet, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Refuge removal.
Internet at number one.
then
electricity, because you can actually power your devices without electricity.
Yeah, true.
And then water, because you can always drink beer.
Oh, the beer.
Anyway, we need to take an ad break and refill our non-existent beers. Uh-huh. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
So I had a very interesting interview this morning with the chairman of MTN. His current title for today only, up to today, is interim executive group chairman of MTN, in effect acting CEO, and he's been in that position for the past 18 months or so. He's stepping down. Today is his last day as an executive at MTN, and making way, of course, for the new CEO, Rob Shooter, who starts on Monday morning, 13th of March. And I had the opportunity, and I really enjoyed the interview, because Phuthuma Nhleko doesn't give media interviews very often, particularly not ones where you sit down and have a detailed recorded conversation. So it was really fun to sit down with an executive of his level and talk about his 15-plus years at MTN, many of those as the leader of the company, and the guy who really grew MTN from what it was, a South African operator with a couple of smaller other territories, into a major player in emerging markets. To talk to him about, you know, what he felt were his greatest achievements and his greatest regrets, you know, what he would do differently if he had an opportunity to go back and do it all again. So it was a fascinating discussion, but a portion of the interview that I really enjoyed chatting to him about was how the telecommunications industry, not just in South Africa, but worldwide, is changing. We've spoken about it plenty of times on the show before, about how the industry has moved away from that, is moving away from the high margin voice era, where telecommunications operators did really well and enjoyed fat profits, profit margins, into a new era where it's the data-led era, where volumes are much higher and margins are lower, and into what I suppose you could term broadly the digital services era, where these companies are moving into providing, into making investments in internet services, content. I mean, MTN has an investment in a company called Snap in Iran, which is an Uber competitor. And it's really, it was really interesting to get his views on the cultural aspects of this, because, you know, these are big telcos. They might only be 20 years old, but they've grown into these big, in many respects, lumbering organizations with their own cultural issues, that are quite far removed from the sort of culture you find in Silicon Valley, in internet startups. And so I had a really interesting discussion with him, getting his views on how you integrate the cultures, the disparate cultures, and how you try to build new businesses with what are going to be younger executives, hungrier executives, and how you get the traditional telco business to work with those, with that side of the business, as you try to transform from being a voice telecommunications company into being a broad data-led internet company. And it was a fascinating discussion. I'd like to just to have a listen to a few minutes of Phuthuma's views on how exactly you do that. So let's have a listen to that.
The skill space that took MTN, you know, from 2000 to even, you know, 2015, which was a particular business construct that we all know, right, is not necessarily the skills base that's going to take you, you know, from where we are today for the next 10 years, because the evolution is very fast, it's becoming more digital, you need to improve your yields, because if you keep on investing the kind of capex we're investing without creating new revenue streams that are of a decent margin, then in effect the return on investment would come down. So he's identified then what the solution is, but fundamentally I'm saying content, financial services, et cetera, broadly called digital and new revenue, really needs to be a very, very important part of the business and needs to grow at such a pace that it outpaces the drop in voice revenue, which obviously was the contributor and the margin driver.
So do you build that from scratch? Do you start your own media business, your own video content streaming service, for example, or do you go out there and do it? Do you do like the US operators are doing? Do you do a Blockbuster acquisition?
Well, I suspect that if you try and do it all yourself, I think you'd lose focus, and I think you'd really, really struggle. I think you need to find a way of saying, what is the best construct of, you know, bringing in that content to a platform that's got 240 million subscribers? And there are many permutations of that as well. But even if, you know, whether it's JVs or certain strategic partners or even an acquisition for that matter, you still need a far more heightened skills base that can deal in that area, which we don't necessarily have. Mm-hmm. You know, we have people who are very much in the traditional mobile telecoms world, but, you know, content and how to exploit it, use it, add value to it, and distribute it is somewhat of a different game.
Well, interesting views from Phuthuma Nhleko, the chairman of MTN, on the cultural difficulty in trying to bridge what they're trying to do into the new world they're trying to go into, the digital services world, with the legacy voice telco world.
Man, that's a tough job. I don't think anybody can do it very easily.
No, it's a tough job, and it's going to be the job. It's what Rob Shooter, the new CEO of MTN, is starting on Monday, is going to have to figure out. They're making big investments in that area. They've got a number of interesting investments. They're investing in content, video on demand, streaming. They're pushing into all of these new areas. We mentioned Snap, the Uber competitor that they're invested in Iran. Do you keep these businesses separate, or do you try and integrate them with the telco business? I mean, Phuthuma's view is clearly that you've got to have some level of integration. I don't know, the cultures are so different.
Yeah, but disruption will get you on every platform. We've seen this with these protests now. And you just need to adapt, and only the strong will survive. I mean, we've had it good for a long time.
Companies can do it. I mean, Microsoft is the classic example of a company that has had to reinvent itself and has done so successfully. I mean, they've done it several times, actually, in the past. I mean, they started out as a packaged software supplier for PCs. the internet came along and disrupted them. They succeeded in... I suppose you could argue how well they succeeded in that era. They call it the Steve Ballmer era.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that they've succeeded hugely successfully in the software as a service cloud computing era.
It took them a while to get there, though.
It did.
If you compare to an equally big company today, BlackBerry, who completely failed because it also failed to see what...
or Nokia.
Where it was going, and Nokia. I mean, who would have thought those two companies would have sold those assets or at least stopped making them?
Indeed. So no doubt that Rob Shooter has a huge challenge ahead of him at MTN, but we'll be watching with a great deal of interest as they move very clearly into a new strategy and a new operating model. Talking of telecommunications, we ran a story on Tech Central this week after I spoke to a number of sources about the ICT policy white paper, which I think we've spoken about just about on every episode of Talk Central for the past month or two. And there's a proposal that's been put on the table, an interesting proposal. They're calling it a hybrid model. Six operators, let me see if I can remember them now. It's Vodacom, Neotel, MTN, Cell C, Telcom, and WBS. Is that six? I think so. And they're working through Deloitte, and they've put a proposal on the table for a hybrid model related to the wholesale open access network that government is proposing in the ICT policy white paper. I don't want to rehash all of the background to this because I'm sure the listeners to this show know it well, but the very short version is that the government wants to create a new monopoly in infrastructure in South Africa in the form of this WOAN, or Wholesale Open Access Network, and all future high-demand spectrum, in other words, spectrum for 4G and in the future presumably 5G as well, will be allocated exclusively to this new monopoly infrastructure provider, and everyone else is expected to compete at a services level. This has drawn huge criticism from analysts and from the big mobile operators. Now, the operators putting this proposal forward through Deloitte and presented it, I think, a couple of weeks ago now at a symposium organized by the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, that the industry, that the WOAN goes ahead and be licensed, but that the operators still get access to exclusive use spectrum. So both models coexist. The WOAN doesn't get all the spectrum, but the existing operators also get spectrum, which they can use themselves to build, which I think is the most critical thing that they're looking for. The question is whether the government is going to accept this. They've put a number of promises on the table. They've said, we will buy 30% of the WOAN's capacity. So whatever it builds, we'll buy 30% of it. In other words, they're coming up with a way to ensure the sustainability and the feasibility of the WOAN, because if they didn't agree to buy from it, then its success is far from guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So addressing, I think, a government concern there that, and probably the reason that they weren't offered exclusive use spectrum is that the government wanted them to ensure the sustainability of this network. So, you know, putting that on the table, and then also making a number of promises around black economic empowerment, saying that they will reach level two under the new BEE codes, which I understand from the now former, we couldn't have said that last week, CEO of MTN South Africa, Mteto Nyati, that is quite a difficult target to attain under the new BEE codes, which are quite rigorous. So it sounds to me like they really have come to the party in terms of this offering, and you know, they're not just coming and saying, well, we'll take you to court, government, you know, we think your idea is rubbish. They've come to the table and they've put a whole lot of proposals there, which I think, you know, actually meet the government halfway on this issue. Now we need to find out whether the government is prepared to listen to them. Because if they don't, it's going to go to court. And I think everyone loses then. The government loses because you know, the objectives of the white paper are going to be delayed by years. The industry loses because they don't get access to new spectrum for years. And it's the consumer loses because the networks aren't being built and the investments are not being made by the network operators. So one hopes that there'll be a meeting of the minds, but the government seems to have been quite intransigent on this so far, repeatedly saying that the white paper is not negotiable. And that we're talking to the industry not about its content, but how we implement it, which I've said in the past, I don't think is a particularly useful approach to take. It's an intransigent approach, and it's the one that will lead the industry to court. So one hopes that sense is going to prevail. I see that the DA's spokeswoman on telecommunications and postal services, Marion Shin, has been following this issue with a great deal of interest and very closely, has written a letter to the Deputy President, Cyril Ramaphosa, saying that or asking him to intervene in this matter, saying that she's worried that you know, the trenches are going to get dug and that there's going to be a you know, let's rather deal with this issue now and again have a meeting of the minds before this ends up in Parliament and before this ends up in the courts, which I think is quite a sensible approach. And one hopes that the Deputy President does have a look at the letter that she wrote to him and does get involved. And you know, Cyril Ramaphosa is a former chairman of MTN until, I think, 2011 or 2012. He was the chairman of MTN before he went back into active politics. So he knows the issues. So one hopes that he will step in and will look at this issue and will provide the leadership, which I think from a government side is actually necessary and perhaps a bit lacking, given the approach that the department has taken to date of basically saying, no, this policy is simply not negotiable. When you're saying to the operators that invest the vast bulk of their money in this industry on network infrastructure, you can say you consulted widely, but I think some players in this industry are more important than others. I mean, MTN and Vodacom invest 23 billion rand a year. Their voices need to be listened to. You can't ignore them. Or you can't put someone who makes no investment in this industry or has made a promise that they might make an investment in this industry in the future. You probably can't give them the same level of credence as you do to someone who's already making those investments and is prepared to continue to make those investments. But so that's the white paper. It's going to be very interesting because the ministry has said that they want this issue before cabinet and finalized by the end of this month. So they are moving very quickly. So it's going to be a story we're going to be following very closely in the coming weeks. Last item of news this week is the WikiLeaks disclosures about the CIA.
More revelations.
Revelations, yes. Is your TV spying on you? Is the head of the CIA watching you on your couch on your fancy new Samsung TV? Interesting that the WikiLeaks information or disclosures, which we still don't know 100% sure actually were from the CIA, but it certainly looks that way because the CIA hasn't confirmed it. But the Samsung TV issue was an interesting one. Samsung TVs with an integrated camera, which certainly is not the bulk of them, but ones with an integrated camera, these documents suggest the CIA has been able to hack them and can take them over without you even knowing that they've been switched on and watch you surreptitiously. Watch your popcorn on your settee. That's obviously not the market they're looking to target, but it's a bit discomforting, I think, if you've got a TV with a little monitor on top staring at you. I must say, if I had one of those TVs, I'd probably put some masking tape over it.
Look, I mean, this the reason why this is quite worrying is the fact that we're only going to get more cameras in our living rooms. If you look at augmented reality and virtual reality, those things require cameras and sensors to know where you are in the room. Once we have those things in every household, this kind of story has got a lot more impact, and it's got a lot more. There's a lot more issues to deal with then.
For sure.
And we can't have this. It's scary stuff.
It is.
Living in a movie, living in a Hollywood movie.
It is. So these disclosures affect a lot of things. Android phones, iPhones, Microsoft software. It's quite wide-ranging. Apple, I see, and other companies have said that a lot of these issues, Microsoft as well, say that a lot of these security vulnerabilities have in fact already been patched. Not all of them, though. I see Julian Assange from WikiLeaks is saying that he's prepared to work with the tech companies now and provide them with the tools. They say they actually have the tools that the CIA uses. They decided not to disclose those or make them available publicly on the internet for obvious reasons, I suppose. But they've said that he's willing to make them available to these tech giants so that they can see what the loopholes are so they can fix them, which sounds fair enough to me. I see Microsoft has already responded saying, well, we've got a channel for this. Simply email this address at Microsoft.com with the information that you have, and we'll look into patching these problems as quickly as possible if they exist.
I think the real issue still remains that, you know, as long as we've got camera-connected devices in an internet-connected things of the world, this will be an issue. And just doing software patches, I think, you know, you're always going to play a catch-up game. Like that famous Facebook photo of Mark Zuckerberg with the tape across his
camera.
That's just kind of something I think most people will start doing or should start doing. It's a physical deterrent to digital problem.
All right, so let's move on to our winner and loser of the week, Rachat. I've chosen our winner, Andrew Bonamore. He's the chief executive of Times Media Group, which publishes the Sunday Times, the Financial Mail and Business Day. I've chosen him mainly because of this response that he issued to a journalist called Joseph Boyson, who's a Business Report multimedia reporter. Now, a Business Report, of course, is owned by Independent Group, which was bought by Iqbal Survey a couple of years ago now. And TMG and Independent Group have had words with each other, I think, in the past. And Times Media, one of the Times Media publications, I think it was the Financial Mail, publishing a piece about Iqbal Survey and the Independent Group, which Iqbal Survey did not take kindly to. So it was in that context that these questions arrived from Joseph Boyson. I'm going to read this because it's really quite entertaining. So Joseph Boyson, who I've never met, emailed a set of questions to Andrew Bonamore, the CEO of Times Media Group. And these are the questions and answers that were sent back. So the first question was, can you please confirm getting a salary of 28 million rand? The answer that Andrew Bonamore sent in response, thanks for the increase. I'll spend it wisely. Oh, wait, you'll need to get it past the board's remuneration committee first. Damn. Next question. Is it true that TN, with an N, not an M, retrenched 450 people, mostly black? The answer, you must be confusing us with another media house. Question, did you keep the white middle management? See above. Question, is Business Day running at a loss? Answer, read our financial statements. The documents are in the public domain. Question, did you sell New Metro to your friends without lease agreements? Answer, you obviously haven't encountered the concept of corporate governance. Question, did you sell exclusive books to Mark Barnes, CEO of the Post Office, and did you declare this to your shareholders? Are you friends with Mr. Barnes, and did you work with him at Brait? Answer, ditto above. TMG has a board of directors who take their fiduciary duty rather seriously. Question, is it true that Dr. Johann Rupert was given a Lifetime Achiever Award, presumably meant to be Lifetime Achiever Award? His answer, to my knowledge, Johann Rupert is self-sufficient and doesn't require lifts.
Not using Uber, obviously.
Next question. Are you a racist? Answer, oy vey. I mean, what sort of question is that? Next question. Would it please be possible to respond to these questions by the end of business today? Answer, lighten up, but it's a Friday. Bonamore then added, on a serious note, these questions clearly suggest a deliberate effort is being made to denigrate myself and Times Media because one of our journalists had the temerity to ask questions about a media business. While a healthy open discussion about the business is essential to any democracy, this sort of slanderous attack is to be regretted. Interesting stuff.
Very interesting.
I'm not sure about the flippant response from him, but maybe it was justified in the context of the questions that were asked. Particularly had question, are you a racist? What sort of question is that? Yes, I'm a card-carrying member of the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, are you supposed to answer a question like that? Anyway, for providing Friday's entertainment, at least, Andrew Bonamore is our winner of the week. And our loser this week, very easy to pick, I'm afraid. And that's the meted taxi drivers who blockaded Johannesburg's highways, particularly the highway to the airport this morning, causing absolute chaos to protest against Uber and the competition they are getting from Uber drivers. I'm sorry, guys, if you want to win the hearts and minds of South Africans and have them come over to your side, don't block a highway.
Yeah, don't make it more difficult like it is.
You've got competition, deal with it, find a way to adapt. Your prices are going to come down because you've got competition. I'm sorry, you don't inconvenience the lives of thousands of people who need to catch flights, people who are commuting to work.
Yeah, it was chaos this morning.
It was total chaos. I had a look at it on Google's as traffic, Google Maps traffic, and it was just this sea of red across the East Rand of Johannesburg this morning because of the highway blockages. I'm sorry, you just don't win hearts and minds of people by doing things like that. And
not at all.
Already
not
when,
at all.
When people find the convenience of Uber to be wonderful, people love Uber. It's a cheaper form of transport than the traditional metered taxi industry, and it's very convenient. So if you want to win the PR war, you're not going to do it by blocking the highway and inconveniencing people. Our losers of the week are all of the meter taxi drivers who were involved in that protest action. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So, Duncan, you know that feeling you get when you go to the beautiful Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, and you want to take a photograph, but there's just thousands of people all around ruining your otherwise beautiful, picturesque shot. I've got an app solution for that. There's a very cool app that I came across recently. It's called Landmark Lens. And essentially what it does is you mount your phone onto a tripod, or your iPhone. It's available on your iPhone. Mount it on your iPhone, on a tripod. And once you activate this app, it will take a series of images. And it's very clever with its algorithm. It uses the series of images to detect the movement in the image. The movement indicates people, and it will then use some special effect to remove people from it. It works remarkably well. The more still you can get the camera, obviously, the better the photograph, and the busier the scene you're trying to take. And it creates some hauntingly beautiful photographs. If you want to go to downtown Joburg, middle of the day, you won't see any people on that photograph. It's not perfect. There are some cases, some people that maybe stay still for too long, you could see some ghosting effect. But to be honest with you, for the most part, the test shots I've taken has come out pretty cool. So that's Landmark Lens.
So you can pretend the apocalypse has already happened.
It's already happened, yeah.
You're the
yeah.
only person left on the planet.
Exactly, exactly. It's quite handy. I mean, I often, you know, if you want to take photographs in places where people are in front of you the whole time, it just kind of eliminates that. You won't probably blow up these photographs to A0 size because it's your cell phone after all.
Mm.
But it's great for social media sharing and a lot of fun.
Great stuff.
Landmarklens.com, and it's a free app.
Yeah, it's iPhone only, you said, hey?
iPhone only, yeah.
Okay. My pick this week, and I guess something not something I would have picked for a long time because I just haven't been using the software, but I decided to go and have another look at Linux.
Linux.
It's been a very, 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 very long time since I ran Linux on my desktop. I think Ubuntu was in its early days when I last used a Linux desktop, and that was a very long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
So I was curious as to know what are people running these days, and there's that DistroWatch website where you can get an idea of what people are downloading and stuff. But I spoke to a good friend of mine who is also an avid fan of this podcast. Hi, Martin. who suggested I check out something called Antigos Linux. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's built on top of Arch Linux, which apparently all the Linux geeks
know cool kids.
All the cool Linux kids are using these days, apparently. It's kind of a user-friendly version of Arch, if you like. Installed it, no issues. Very easy to install. Installed it on a ThinkPad. Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon worked absolutely beautifully. All the hardware worked, the touchscreen, everything, and easy to use and fast, and a really great distro, I must say. It uses the GNOME desktop environment, which I've always, even when I was using Ubuntu back in the day, I always preferred GNOME over any of the other I'm going to get crucified by our open source user listeners. The user interface, yes. I've always preferred that to things like KDE, for example. Although it'll run, I'm just having a look, it'll run Cinnamon, Mate, KDE, Plasma 5, and XFCE desktops. So you're not stuck with GNOME. But running on top of GNOME, it's absolutely beautiful and really easy to use. My only issue with Linux is you still can't get the more popular Office suites, for example, Photoshop and that sort of thing to run on it unless you use some sort of emulation software like Wine. But there are good alternatives to most apps available now. If you don't mind using things like the GIMP instead of Photoshop,
great piece of software,
or using LibreOffice instead of Microsoft Office. The biggest hitch I actually ran up against was finding something that supports an Exchange server for my email and calendaring and that sort of thing. I wasn't really able to find
a solution. Mozilla products, do they still exist? I don't know.
And they do. There's Thunderbird. Thunderbird, which still seems to be quite popular on the Linux platform for email, but it doesn't support Exchange server environments.
It's still not supports Exchange.
It doesn't. You can access that stuff through the web, to be fair. You don't have to have an Exchange client on your desktop.
It does prevent it from being a mainstream operating system.
I guess it does. Yeah. There's always workarounds. There's always ways of doing things. Linux always has been and probably always will be an OS for tinkerers. If you don't mind, going online and finding a solution or even writing your own solution. if you're technically minded, if you're tech savvy, then Linux still is a great OS.
Oh, yeah.
And it's come a long way since the last time I used it. I have to say it's looking good.
I haven't used it in a long time.
It's robust. It's stable. It's fast. Certainly this distribution that I'm trying out is all of those things.
Would you use it as your primary operating system?
No, I wouldn't.
So it'll always be a secondary device.
I'm playing with it. I'm having fun with it. But I've put it on a secondary laptop. I would not run it on my primary laptop or my primary desktop machine, just because I need to get things done quickly and I don't have time to
come on line code, open and edit an image.
No. And I'm not. To be honest, I'm not. I'm probably not tech savvy enough to be able to do a lot of the things that hardcore Linux users can probably do in their sleep. You've still got the issues like device drivers. We record this podcast, we use some pretty advanced podcast editing software, which I'm sure there's an alternative available on Linux, but it's so easy to use on Windows. I'd rather just use the commercial software that's available for Windows.
Productivity at the end of the day.
It is. I think moving to Linux would affect my productivity. I think if you know Linux, if you're someone who's grown up on it, who's if you're a developer, if you're comfortable around a Unix command line, then it's fantastic. You know, you can do great stuff with it.
Yeah.
But it's not an everyman's OS. It's still not an everyman's OS. But I enjoy tinkering, and you know, I did try to run Ubuntu as my desktop OS, and I did run it as my desktop OS for I think a good couple of years. At one point, when you know, I got the hell in with Windows XP or whatever it was in the day.
The alternative is.
Yeah. You know, it's great stuff. So if you've got an old machine lying around, or even a not so old machine, and if you haven't tinkered with Linux for a few years, and I think a lot of people who did run Ubuntu and other Linux distros, I think they ended up going Mac, and now they sit on Mac OS X. And you know, I think like me, there are a lot of guys out there who couldn't make it their primary OS, or no longer wanted to use it as their primary OS, who've moved on, either gone back to Windows, or I think in most cases have moved to Mac. You know, it's worth going and having a look at how far the open source community has come in some of the software that's available. It's not always a completely seamless experience, but certainly Antigos, the Antigos Linux distro that I've installed, is very pretty and pretty powerful once you figure a way around it, which is not difficult to do. So there we go.
Put your kids on it, they'll learn coding very quickly.
Oh, indeed. And thanks, Martin, for the tip about Antigos and for helping me with some of the software on there. I appreciate it. And that, I think, is our show. It is indeed. We just need to do our quiz results.
Yep.
Let me ask the first one. MTN's Batuma Nhleko steps down as interim executive chairman on Monday to make way for new CEO Rob Shooter. He will revert to being non-executive chairman, but he intends to step down from the board altogether. When will this happen? And that'll happen by December 2018. And if you haven't already done so, I do highly recommend going to listen to that podcast interview with Batuma Nhleko, which is on Tech Central at the moment, or you can get it through our other podcast feed, the Tech Central podcast. If you simply search Tech Central in your podcatcher, iTunes or Pocket Casts or whatever you happen to use, you'll find both this podcast and the Tech Central podcast there. We recommend subscribing to both of them, and I think you'll find it worthwhile your time.
The second question. MultiChoice is expanding its DStv Now streaming service to more subscribers. Apart from premium, which other bouquets now have access? The answer, DStv Extra and DStv Compact.
Our third question. The CEO of MTN South Africa, Mteto Nyati, quit this week. What's his new job? And for a bonus point, who is taking over as the CEO at MTN South Africa? And Nyati is going to Ultron to take over as CEO from Robbie Fenter. And the new MTN SA boss is Godfrey Motsa.
The fourth question. Fiber broadband provider Vumatel is expanding in KwaZulu-Natal through an acquisition of which company? The answer, Estate Connections.
And our last question in our quiz this week. WikiLeaks' leaks of apparent CIA spying tools showed the agency allegedly was able to hack and take over the cameras on which brand's TVs? And if you have one, get some masking tape now. The answer is Samsung Electronics.
Look, if you have any camera, let's put a tape on that. I think that's good practice. Let's make it a hashtag drive.
Indeed. Just take it off when you do a Skype call or something.
Oh, yeah, please.
That's our show for this week. As always, we love to hear your feedback, and thank you. We've been getting lots of it lately. Our email address for that is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from myself and Rechart, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.